pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support issues, etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon His Word firmly and faithfully. Issues, etc. raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending life from beginning to end. Issues Etc. Thanks for your support.
Being silenced for my beliefs. This isn't a battle that anybody can win. I was a little hesitant to be stepping into the line of fire, I'll be honest.
From the moment I gave my answer on stage that night, I have had no support from the Miss California organization. This is all happening because of the stance that I took for traditional marriage.
Were the jokes in questionable taste? Of course they were. Would I do anything to advocate or contribute to underage sexual abuse or misconduct? Absolutely not. Not in a thousand years. Look at me.
It took a couple of days for him to think of that excuse that, no, he wasn't talking about my daughter who was there with me at the game, the 14-year-old. He was talking about some other daughter.
Seems to make good marketing sense, doesn't it? If you're going to market to a group of people who are looking for a generic feel-good spiritual experience, the building you're going to draw them into should be generic and feel-good, easily accessible, lots of light, lots of space, unimposing, easy to understand. It should look a lot like a college campus, a community college campus, or a shopping mall, because that's what people are comfortable with. They're comfortable in those kinds of spaces. And for the last 30 years or so, a lot of churches have taken the advice or this kind of marketing advice and said, if we're going to build a new church building, we're going to make it as generic, unimposing, and as feel good and as physically accessible as it could possibly be. Nothing in there that's going to confuse or even raise a single question. We want people to feel as comfortable walking into this church as it would walking into the local shopping mall, which is why a lot of these churches just end up looking like Inside and Out, the local shopping mall. And yet a new survey tells us that seekers are looking for something that looks a little bit more like church. In fact, they might even be looking for something that is a little bit more like church. We're going to talk about that survey and church architecture here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. this Monday, June the 15th. Pastor James Wettstein joins us from Valparaiso University. In the second half hour of the program, we'll break that up a little bit of our Issues Etc. comment line, hear what our listeners have been saying lately on the comment line. Robert Spencer will join us to round off the first hour. We'll talk about Iran's presidential elections, which appear to be officially over, but for all practical purposes, still up in the air. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse will join us to talk about the importance of fatherhood, even when it's in vitro fertilization, even when it's lesbian couples adopting a child or having a child by in vitro fertilization. Are fathers still necessary? And then Greg Kokel will join us to talk about responsible science and embryonic stem cell research. That's the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. We have an in-studio email address. We get your questions and comments right here in real time, just like a phone call. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Pastor James Wettstein is a regular guest, associate pastor at Valparaiso University. He serves as a member of the Architectural Advisory Committee for the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Pastor Wettstein, welcome back.
Thanks.
How do you explain the fact that it appears that seekers are looking for stuff that looks and maybe is more like church? And in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, a lot of the congregations that are consider themselves cutting edge are out there trying to still build the big box church, the church that looks like the shopping mall, the unimposing and generic architecture?
Well, you know, without knowing specifics, it seems as though that is a little behind the curve. I think what this survey indicates is that folks, at a deep level, folks know what they're seeking. I mean, they know what they need, and they know what they need is different from what happens and what's offered to them in the rest of the culture. But I think the other thing that we're learning is that sort of postmodern architecture, there is some symbolic language that churches have because of the investment in symbolism over the centuries, and that symbolic language of spires and arches and windows and so forth continues to carry weight in the culture and continues to communicate. So, Todd, I think there are like two or three issues at play here that are often confused in people's minds, and they all interact. One is what's happening in architecture generally as we move away from the modernist credo of buildings as machines and a completely utilitarian expression and trying to be ahistorical. That's one thing. Two is an acknowledgement, theological acknowledgement, that folks seek, need, and create sacred space. And I think that was present in the article, even in the awareness that even as churches convert buildings that were formerly something else into places of worship, they are at some level, even if it's just intuitively, seeking to create a sacred space. And then the third one is just being the church being aware of what's happening in the culture around it, and that possibly in an increasingly religiously pluralistic environment, the place for Christianity to express itself is not to blend into the background, but to be pretty explicit about who the church is, who we are, and how we are present in the community. And that suggests that churches ought to think about using, making use of the huge storehouse, symbolic storehouse that is present in over 2,000 years of church architecture.
Is church architecture neutral? Or I guess another way of answering is, why, if it is, why is church architecture unique?
You mean among architecture?
Just as when the church employs the craft of architecture,
uh-huh.
Why is its use of it unique?
Well, its use of it is unique because the church is unique. I mean, insofar as the church is proclaiming a reality that goes unproclaimed in every other facet of human society, and I think that's just a sort of a general statement. It's gonna present itself, or it's gonna say things that nobody else is saying. From an institutional perspective. So if you're proclaiming the gospel, if you're proclaiming the reality of the incarnation, if you're proclaiming the fact that God is present in a material fashion in bread and wine, in the waters of baptism, and in the community of believers, and in the service that community brings to the world around it, you're going to create a house that is different from the institution that has as its core mission the selling of stereos or furniture or movies.
Okay, well, if I walk into the local Best Buy,
it's
a building built for selling electronics. That's what it's
Absolutely.
Built for. If I walk into to Busch Stadium in St. Louis, the
mm-hmm.
building built for baseball and for and for housing baseball. What is the building of the church built for?
Well, it's built, I mean, from a Lutheran perspective, it's built to house a community that comes into the presence of God in Christ Jesus for the sake of receiving the gifts that Jesus brings in order to take those gifts out to a world that has no access. Mm-hmm. And that's going to, I mean, if that's your agenda, then you ought to be creating buildings that are consistent with that agenda.
What was the logic of the movement in church architecture in the last several decades to go towards the more generic, the big box, the shopping mall?
Oh, it's older than that, Todd. I would argue that the logic that you're seeing in the big box thing stems from the 20th century movement, post-war movement, away from traditional church iconography or symbolism in buildings, in favor of something that is more human in scale, speaks more to the presence of God in the community rather than the presence of any kind of transcendent God, is seeking to blend into the community because I mean, it's in part driven by a theology that seeks to be seeker sensitive, but it was also heavily driven by the ideology of modern architecture that was trying to throw off conventional symbolism in all of its forms. I mean, you saw government buildings and libraries and everything else that was built in that modernist as an expression of that modernist ideology, throwing off very conventional or historic forms for all of those structures, and building pretty plain, arguably beautiful in their simplicity, boxes that would house the functions of those organizations. But just to move away from church architecture, you know, since that has run its course, and we've started to think again about what it means to build buildings and create spaces, I think you've started to see buildings that are looking back to older forms and maybe thinking about them in new ways. And the one that immediately springs to mind, if your listeners know it, is the new main library building in Chicago, which is very much paying homage to the big old masonry buildings that are some of the first skyscrapers in Chicago, and it's got a big copper-clad roof with gargoyles on the top of it.
Let's talk more about that on the other side of the break. Pastor James Wettstein is our guest, not only a movement in architecture, but of course the church is there for certain things. We'll talk about why the altar, the pulpit, the font are prominently displayed and should be in classical Christian churches. We're talking about a new survey on seekers and church architecture. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back, Carol Viles, Michael Leddock, Robert Bach, Jim and Melanie Applebaum, Ward Tyler, Bonnie Rodenberg, Matthew Musigman, David Eaton, Jeffrey Buckman, and Roy White. Thanks for your support.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach
by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. At our website, issuesetc.org, click Promote, the Issues Etc. 300.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a new survey on seekers in church architecture. It's a Lifeway survey commissioned by the Cornerstone Knowledge Network. They found that unchurched adults prefer Gothic buildings, the more ornate buildings. They were shown four pictures of various types of church architecture, and 1,600 unchurched adults, and the majority preferred the most ornate church. The director of the survey said the study probably tells us the appearance of a traditional church might not be the turnoff that people assumed in the seeker age. We're talking to Pastor James Wettstein, associate pastor at Valparaiso University. He serves as a member of the Architectural Advisory Committee for the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. You can read an article that he's written about church architecture under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Look for Couldn't This Have Been Sold and the Money Given to the Poor by Pastor James Wettstein. Our call-in number on this Monday afternoon, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Before the break, you were telling us about a new library in Chicago that's reflecting the trend back toward buildings that say something about what happens inside the building.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I mean, the library in Chicago employs the traditional symbolism of historic civic buildings. In a new and different way, it certainly wouldn't be confused with a building that was built in the 1890s or 1700s. It's very contemporary in its flavor, in the way it uses materials, in the sort of the outsized nature of, I mean, the gargoyles on the top of the library building are oversized. They're kind of overstated. To make a point that they're kind of back, I think. But it's a building that definitely pays attention to the fact that that it's aware, or acknowledges that it's aware of the way libraries have been built in the past, and doesn't try to minimize that connection. And I think the point that the article you're referring to acknowledges, and I think that the issue that the survey uncovers, is that even non-church folks are aware enough of conventional architectural symbolism that the symbolism of historic churches reads for them. I mean, it makes sense to them. They know what to do with it. It communicates to them. And as such, might be a better way of reaching the unchurched with the message of the gospel than by building something that in its genericness actually becomes a little bit confusing to people.
Steve is listening in St. Louis. Steve, welcome.
You know, this follows suit because if you think about it, baseball stadiums are like this. We use the current Busch Stadium. It has a retro look versus the old Busch Stadium that we replaced, which was one of these multi-purpose stadiums, which was neither a football stadium nor a baseball stadium. It tried to be both, and it was neither good at either. And I think we want our sports facilities to be authentic, and I think that falls through to what we want other spaces to be, like our churches.
Thank you, Steve. Pastor Wettstein.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that Steve's tapping into the fact that, that stadium is built with an awareness of a baseball tradition and that there is a deeper appreciation today for such tradition than there was 40 years ago, 30 years ago.
Why is it that altar, pulpit, font are prominently displayed in classical Christian churches?
'Cause that's where the action is. I mean, that's where that's where Christ is present with the gifts, and the reason for coming to church is to be in the presence of Christ who gives gifts. So, those churches are purpose built, and the purpose is an encounter with God.
Do we have an aversion, or are we getting over our aversion to beauty in the church?
Boy, I hope so. I think that there's still in lots of places and in lots of building projects, a kind of lowest common denominator pragmatism. How can we maximize square footage and minimize cost? And that really oftentimes really gets in the way of beauty, because oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, beauty costs money. It makes us, it calls us to sacrifice for finer materials. It calls us to pay attention to the way light falls, the way buildings are oriented. Maybe it makes us spend a little bit more money running a little bit of longer ductwork in order to get the mechanicals tucked away someplace where they're less obtrusive. I'm hopeful that as congregations become more aware of just how visually savvy their market is, to use that kind of language, I'm hoping that people who make decisions will recognize that there is value in beautiful spaces.
You said before that the altar pulpit and font are classically displayed in classical Christian churches because that is where the action is. It's a theological statement of what the church is there for and what's happening, what Christ is doing there in the church. What's the theological statement when I walk into a church and instead of those things I see an elevated stage with a drum kit and a stage band set up?
Well, I think that you're either seeing an expression of or a borrowing from an agenda for Sunday morning that it is much more educational in its intention. One way of understanding differences within Christendom is certainly American Christendom is to recognize that when some Christians gather on Sunday morning, they are primarily there to meet Jesus. But when other Christians gather on Sunday morning, they are there for instruction on the Christian life. And the space that you just described, where the stage is dominant, where the speaker is dominant, where the speaker is accompanied then by, you know, musicians off to the side that function in a way that is similar to the way bands function with a main speaker in a more entertainment setting, those setups are coming out of a tradition that sees Sunday morning primarily as a time of education in the ways of the Christian life, which is all well and good. I'm not suggesting that folks don't need to be educated and discipled, but it's a different primary agenda than a Christianity which sees Sunday morning as primarily about an encounter with Jesus.
Is it verging toward entertainment? I mean, I look at the setup of some of these churches, and with the very few changes, it could be the set of the Tonight Show.
Well, sure. It is, because, you know, there's a school of thought that says that if you want to educate people, you've got to keep them entertained and you've got to keep them engaged. And if your goal is education, then you're going to do whatever's necessary in order to get your message across. But the goal in those settings, and I think this is often missed by Lutherans and others who borrow from that scene, the goal in those settings is not sacramental. It's not about an encounter with Jesus primarily. Certainly those folks would say that Christ is present where two or three are gathered and that Jesus lives in their heart and all of that stuff. But if your goal is primarily to get a message across, a teaching message across, then you're going to do in your environment whatever you think is going to work in order to achieve that goal.
Okay, then with about 30 seconds to respond,
sure.
To JJ in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, he emails, what draws people to a church may be the arches, but what keeps them is different. If you don't explain how architecture facilitates worship, then it's meaninglessness. And eye candy. How many LCMS Lutherans really understand their architecture? About a minute to respond.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's what brings people to church are the relationships with the people who bring them to church. I mean, let's be real, that it's about the congregation and its ministry to the community around it. The consistency, though, is that a building that houses a people who reach out with the gospel ought to be a building that expresses the gospel. And that, you know, as people reach into the community and tell their friends who Jesus is and invite them to church and explain to them how Christ is present in the sacraments, all of these other things make sense, and the building works for folks. But the other thing that's present too is that if a building obliges me to reach a little bit and ask questions, that too can become the occasion of witness.
Pastor James Wettstein is associate pastor at Valparaiso University. He serves as a member of the Architectural Advisory Committee for the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Thank you very much for being our guest.
You're welcome, Todd. Thanks for asking.
Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is a distinctly Lutheran resource, while at the same time being a solid resource for sound biblical study. The two are not mutually exclusive in any sense. It's called the Lutheran Study Bible, a study Bible of the highest caliber and scholarship that is written from and put together from a distinctly reformational Lutheran perspective. Nothing to be apologetic about. The Lutheran Study Bible can be found at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can pre-order the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, the Lutheran Study Bible. When we come back from this break, we're going to spend a few minutes talking with our listeners, or at least listening to our listeners. The Issues Etc. comment line has been filling up. We're going to play some of those comments, and then we'll spend the last 10 minutes of the first hour with Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, author of several books on Islam, including Stealth Jihad. We'll talk about what happened, what didn't happen, and who's actually in charge of Iran after their presidential elections. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris will join us to talk about the importance of fatherhood, and we'll discuss responsible science and embryonic stem cell research with Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Monday afternoon, the 15th of June. Stay tuned.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, you're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Richard Newfer, Jamie Rake, Eugene Zoski, Mike Dobbs, Ann Stala, T.A. Olmstead, Neil Pawerski, Mark Pottier, and Debbie Boosie. Thanks for your support.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Another chapter has unfolded in the wake of the death of late-term abortionist George Tiller. He was killed by a gunman, and a suspect has been charged with his death. Two attorneys for the family of George Tiller made a dramatic announcement. The late-term abortion facility, where over 60,000 unborn babies have been killed, has been permanently closed. We'll have to wait and see what will become of this place of death. It's remembered for its on-site crematorium, where the bodies of the unborn were disposed of, eerily reminiscent of Auschwitz. I absolutely condemn the murder of Mr. Tiller. The fact no more babies will be killed and mothers emotionally scarred at this location will bring comfort to this tragic situation. Join me in prayer all abortion is peacefully ended.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.